Ron Wolf has been on the program at first, probably around the year 2000. Of late, last several years, he comes on every January to discuss and recap new rental laws, because Ron Wolf is owner of Wolf & Associates, managing about 2,000 rental units in the Tri-Counties area, and making an unexpected appearance to discuss Proposition 33 on rent control. Welcome back to Radio Real Estate, Ron Wolf.
Well, thank you, Mark. Always a pleasure to be here and talk with you.
Well, thank you for taking the time. And Ron sent me a great, great outline of issues and discussing what we have. He's really he also has his own newsletter that he does for his clients, landlords. So Prop 13, boy, you're seeing a lot of people you wouldn't expect to see against it. Before we get into the details, maybe we should start with what we currently have, or if you want to start with, you know, what the yes and no vote means, I guess you could start there as well.
Okay. Well, and actually, Mark, it's Prop 33.
What did I say?
13.
You said 13. 13 is the deals with taxes.
Well, I know I have dyslexia, but Proposition 33 would be the same either way, so I don't know why I said Prop 13. Okay, sorry, Prop 13.
Yeah, just added a number here and there.
Okay.
So, well, Prop 33 is the one that's labeled as Justice for Renters Act, and that sounds like a very noble cause. In theory, it's being promoted based on housing shortages in California. We've got one of the largest homeless populations, second highest poverty rate, lots of housing challenges in terms of availability. But it boils down to arguments that rents are too high, which just deals with a number of complicated issues and ramifications. But basically, a yes vote to Prop 33 would give governments, local governments, the power to enact or change rent control laws and apply them to more types of properties than they currently do. These laws typically involve property registration, administrative boards, usually unelected, reporting of vacancies, significant budgets, and become somewhat complicated as you have rent control implemented in communities. But the specific target of this bill, when you really go through it carefully, is the Costa-Hawkins Act, which limits the type and scope of rent control local governments can impose. And that's an existing law. So a no vote then would keep the state laws and limits in place. It does not preclude rent control, but it does limit the types and scope of rent control that local governments can impose.
Okay. And as I said, I've seen some people that you would think would support rent control of being opposed to Proposition 33. And also, you kind of mentioned California has the highest number of homeless, but in addition, as a percentage, we have the highest, because we're a big state. So you might say, well, you know, it makes sense we have the highest number of homeless, but also as a percentage. So what do we currently have in terms of rent control?
Okay, well, there are two very basic issues that we currently have in place. The first one is what is called the Costa-Hawkins Rental Housing Act. This was enacted in 1995. I thought it was by the voters, but it may have actually been a legislative action. But basically, it restricts the reach of local rent control by barring cities and counties from capping rent increases on apartments built after 1995. It exempts condos and single-family homes of any age, unless they're owned by a corporation or a REIT. It exempts duplexes if one unit is occupied by the owner. the main component of it is that it bans vacancy control. And basically what that is when a unit is vacated, the housing providers or the owner of the vacant unit can raise rent to market as opposed to having to leave it at the rate that was under rent control.
And are you saying that Costa Hawkins prevents a landlord from bringing the rental market, the rate to market when it's vacant?
Just the opposite.
Okay, good. Okay.
So if somebody's lived there for 5 years and the rents are lower because of rent control, or even if they're not under rent control, when the unit vacates and the owner goes in and prepares it for the next renter, they can set the rate at market or what they think it is. Sometimes we find they set it too high and the unit doesn't rent. So it just becomes a function of the market.
Now that's interesting. I mean, if you're a tenant or an advocate for tenants, you might see that as fewer affordable rentals when someone vacates. You know, there's no control. I mean, is that one argument on the other side?
Yes. Yeah. This is a bill or an act that has been challenged. It was challenged in 2018 under, it was called Proposition 10 at that point. They were trying to get rid of Costa Hawkins. There was another challenge in 2019 under Proposition 21. So this is the third challenge trying to eliminate Costa Hawkins. And it's been brought up for vote each of these times, largely funded by the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, which is also, if you are looking at your ballot, there's a Proposition 35 that pushes back on this foundation, which purportedly is using tax revenues to do public housing types of causes as opposed to patient care. So, and I'm not as well versed in that, but people should look at it. They're somewhat in tandem in that the housing providers are saying, hey, we've gone through this process. This is the third time now. We think the funds that are being used to try to promote these changes are being misused. So we've got to look at that too.
Am I correct? My guest, Ron Wolf, a Wolf and Associates property managers here in the Tri-Counties, am I correct? Part of the existing Rental Housing Act, Costa Hawkins, is that where the cap once a year is placed at 5% plus whatever the CPI is, not to exceed 10%? Is that part of Costa Hawkins?
No. Costa Hawkins doesn't have any of that type of provision. What you would be referencing is what they call Senate Bill 1482, which is the California Tenant Protection Act of 2019. And that's it's a statewide rent control project or law. Billed as the strongest statewide rental protections in the nation. And that's the one that basically says rents cannot be increased any more than in a 12-month period than 5% plus the cost of living. And they use, and it's not to exceed 10%. So the cost of living is pegged, it's usually, in fact, it's always April of each year. They compare the cost of living to the prior year, and you can go up that much.
And this year, is it about 3%, 3.5% or something?
It's 5% plus that, so it's about 8.5%. It varies by geography. So there are different cost of livings in different parts of the state.
Different counties.
Your specific area of your county.
Different counties. Yeah, no, I meant specifically 3.5% at the CPI plus the 5%. So the cap. Now, people happy with that? Is that something that tenant unions, is that a good thing? People like that, or?
You know, it seems to be working. What we find, at least in this area, is increases for existing residents, particularly if their rents are already at about market, have been more in the 4%, maybe 5% range. So they're not going to the caps that they could. Although what is interesting is we've had owners who rarely did any rent increases that are now doing them because they're saying, look, if we're capped and if there's a possibility that we'll never be able to change the rent, we don't want to get put in that position. So we are pushing harder.
But thank you. You know, that is a huge point to make. You've been in this business for years, and plenty of landlords kept rents low. But with all this specter coming, they're afraid that they'll never be able to make it up. My guest, Ron Wolf, Wolf & Associates. Okay, if I had looked down at my outline, I would have seen Senate Bill 1482, which you just discussed. What is being proposed?
Well, let me back up just a little bit because there's more to this, the Tenant Protection Act.
Oh, okay.
And I think it's good people be aware of what's available there. This, you know, cities or counties that have rent control can be more but not less restrictive than what the state is. And then classically, rent control provisions include what they call just cause eviction requirements, which means that a property owner must provide a valid reason for evicting tenants who have occupied a residence for more than 1 year. Usually it ties to failure to pay rent, but it can be violations of rental agreements or that type of thing. An owner move-in could be just cause, but what we're seeing even in our local community is what they're calling rent-ovictions, where somebody wants to go in and renovate a property, typically properties that are older, that seriously need work, have been under-rented for years because they're in under-market conditions, and then there are relocation expenses that a owner has to pay to those residents if they move them. The Senate Bill 1482 also extended rent caps on some properties that were not covered by local control ordinances, but most single-family homes and condominiums are exempt. There is an interesting component of that. To be exempt, you have to actually give the tenant a notice in writing when you sign up the rental agreement or you change the terms of the rental agreement. So it's not automatically exempt, but it is if it...
Do you hear this little pinging? It sounds like an alert. Are you getting emails or texts, people already complaining about this interview? Do you hear that little chime? We can hear it. It's not terribly bad, but no problem. Is this new bill, is it trying to, well, first of all, have you finished with 1482 and what it does?
Yeah, let's focus on what's being proposed.
Okay.
What that would do is let local governments enact or change rent control laws and apply to more types of properties and prevents the state from taking future actions to limit rent control. So basically, it wipes the slate clean and says, look, any local government entity can have their own rent control program, and whatever the state has mandated in the past is no longer relevant. So it enables, you know, we've got something like 480 cities, 58 counties, some of these already have rent control, but it enables any of them to set rent control and to not include Costa Hawkins, which is the provision that many property owners are concerned about losing, that allows for vacancy decontrol.
How about Senate Bill 1482 that you just described with the 5% plus the CPI cap? What would it do to that? That goes away too? And you're saying that local governments, so that means Santa Barbara County can make a law to cover the entire county, or is it up to each city? Can they do something different?
Could be either one. And it, you know, it opens up issues, and we hit them with COVID, where different cities, depending upon the perceived needs or the political pressures in those areas, set different parameters for how to deal with that. So we would deal with something different in Oxnard than you did in Ventura, different Santa Barbara, different city of Goleta, could be different city of Carpinteria. You end up with a lot of fingers in the pot trying to manage housing issues that are probably better dealt with at the state level. And it's an effort that helps everybody in the state as opposed to people in specific communities.
It's an interesting dilemma. My guest, Ron Wolf, Wolf and Associates Property Managers, because on the one hand, people cry for local control, you know, on building, and, you know, you can't make one rule for the entire state. On the other hand, when you got into what we have now with the Senate Bill 1482 that caps rents, so you can have some cities that decide, like, you know what, we're not going to have any caps on rents. You can do whatever you want. And then some other cities are going to go the extremely opposite way. So I guess you're saying we need more uniformity throughout the state.
I think that's the bottom line feeling of a lot of people who are opposed to Prop 33, is that you need some uniformity. And it's a statewide problem for the housing, so-called, I shouldn't call it a so-called, the housing issues that we're having are a statewide problem. They're certainly impacting all the local entities, but a lot of these were created by the state and should probably be solved by the state.
And ironically, rent control, one would think, if you're a tenant, you think this is a good thing. But why does it somehow distort the market, or, you know, why does it can have the opposite effect?
It gets kind of complicated. I think certainly some controls, particularly in the environment we're in, seem reasonable, and the state's program currently seems to be reasonably effective. The downside, and it depends on the type of rent control that exists, is that it can favor some people and others. It hurts them. It makes it so landlords decide they're just not going to deal with it rather than continue to rent, so you end up with fewer rental properties. And you've seen that consistently in any areas that have rent control, and even in different countries that have rent control. The quality of the property or the maintenance for the properties often gets impacted because owners are just not willing to spend money or don't have the money to spend. It also impacts the supply because lenders look at properties subject to rent control and are less willing to loan on those properties. So it can have a pretty significant impact on the availability of rental units. And when you start decreasing the availability, then you've got a supply and demand issue where there's pressure, upwards pressure on rent. So it's an unintended consequence, and it's not necessarily positive for tenants and the pricing of rental housing.
Well, didn't you have some examples of some cities in California?
Yeah, there are several that exist in California. I think our most publicized ones are what you see in Santa Monica, San Francisco, San Jose, where the rent controls have been pretty significant, and the impact has not helped renters, and it's resulted in the deterioration of properties and the abuse of the rent control laws. You know, where somebody would move in, say they're a student out of college getting a unit in Santa Monica, 20 years ago, the rents have been controlled. That student is now gainfully employed, making substantially more money than they made before, but unwilling to move because the rents are so low. So So the people it was intended to help, it helped at inception, but 20 years later, it's not helping that same group anymore. It's benefiting people who probably don't need rent-controlled housing.
Right, if their career and they're at the level from 20 years ago, and maybe their career has gone up. Now, I'm sure there's some older people that benefit from it, but the point being is that if people don't move, then you're not benefiting new tenants.
Yeah, and that's exactly what's happened throughout the areas that have had rent control. New York is another good example. Those rent control buildings are in terrible condition and not attractive to renters beyond the price, the subsidized or the low rents that have been caused by the rent control.
Right, right. All right, so what's next on our summary page here?
Okay, well, might just talk some about the unintended consequences, and we've touched on that a little bit already, but generally, and we've seen recently issues at the state legislature, and this is actually a ballot initiative, but not a legislation.
Hey, Ron, let me stop you. Let's take a commercial break and come back. Ron Wolf, Wolf & Associates, property manager. We'll come back. We'll start right there. Unintended consequences, just what you started to say. You're listening to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, radiorealestate.com. Stay tuned. You'll be right back.